Welcome to the Did You Know podcast by Verisource, where we interview founders and executives at amazing technology companies that can help your business save time and money and grow, especially bring awareness to smarter, better, faster solutions that can transform your business. Hello, everyone. This is Victor with Verisource. Welcome to another episode of the Did You Know podcast. Today, I'm super excited to not only bring, you know, a customer, a partner, but also a friend. CJ Gustafson, I always try to pronounce his last name correctly. And CJ is the CFO of PartsTech. And PartsTech is the kayak of aftermarket car parts. Super excited to have you on, CJ.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Victor. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of, you know, the theme of this episode is the modern CFO, and you have such an interesting background and different point of view just based on your career. So can you give us a little bit of background, kind of how you started and how you became kind of the CFO now?
Yeah, sure. It's been, you know, kind of a wild ride to get to this point. And I never really knew for sure if I was going to end up in kind of a CFO seat. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things in your career journey where you go as far as you can see. And once you get to that point, you can see a little further. And, you know, at the beginning, you know, I graduated from Boston College, and my first gig out of school was a consultant at PwC. So my job was to help with due diligence on M&A targets for large private equity firms. And I did that for about 2 years, and I got to travel around the country and see a lot of different business models. And that was awesome just to, you know, see how companies organize their resources and also how they monetize their businesses, especially for someone who wasn't like all that sure what he wanted to do with his career. And from there, I actually got a chance to go to a private equity firm where I was responsible for portfolio valuations on a quarterly basis. So I had 8 or 9 companies that I was responsible for monitoring, keeping up with their operations. And that's where I took my Excel skills from, say, like a 2 to maybe like a 9. I may be a little stale now that, you know, I'm more in a people management role. Maybe I'm like a 7, but there I kind of learned how to build a discounted cash flow model, how to dig into a business's operating forecast. And that's also, you know, I think maybe most importantly, what I learned about the world of SaaS and how technology companies were increasingly monetizing their products through cloud-based solutions. And, you know, I did that for a couple of years, and then I had this choice where, you know, I could plow ahead on the private equity side. A lot of those smart guys have MBAs, and it kind of seemed like I would need to go to grad school if I wanted to continue down that road. Or I could kind of get what I call my real world MBA and move over to the operating side. And that's actually the path I chose to do. And, you know, since then, I guess the rest is kind of history. I've been helping scale, you know, startups from the finance and strategy angle since then.
Yeah, no. And again, you know, I think the modern CFO, there's so many different points of views, not just on finance, but the overall business. So, you know, again, you're super busy. Yet at the same time, you have this, you know, blog that you have, mostly metrics. How did you came up with it? And why is it something that you're so passionate about? Because you're always updating content, right? That means you put a lot of heart and soul into it. And you really care. And it's a lot of educational information about finance, about, you know, startups, about metrics, about data, right? But why, on top of everything you already have going on, like why kind of do that?
Yeah, it's my passion project. And writing is something that I've always loved to do. I know people say that CFOs are numbers guys, but I think growing up in school, you know, English and writing was actually my favorite subject, something kind of odd for, you know, like I said, a numbers guy to say. But I was in this period in my career where, you know, the company I was at and helping to grow, it was truly hyper growth, you know, triple digit growth each year. And I was kind of looking around and saying, wow, everything is moving so fast. I don't want to forget this playbook. And I think a lot of us realize that, you know, in the startup world, you often work with, you know, the same group of people in a tight knit setting. And, you're very loyal to those people in the network, but you may go on to work at a different company, you know, probably with them as well at another point. So it's kind of, how do I write down this playbook? So, you know, when I, you know, have a position to be a CFO down the line, I have some good notes on it. And second reason why I started it was as an excuse to, you know, talk to smart people. So, you know, everybody's asking people, hey, can I pick your brain for 5 minutes? Can I buy you coffee? But this was kind of a chip that I could say, hey, listen, I'm writing about something that's relevant to your industry. I look at you as an expert. Can I interview you? And then the third thing was, it was just how I remembered things, and something that I enjoyed to do, like I said. And I figured if I wrote it down, it would help me catalyze my thoughts. And there were, I think why it caught on, Victor, and, you know, we're approaching 20,000 subscribers now, which is pretty wild, is because I was writing about things that were extremely relevant to what I was doing day to day. I wasn't just writing about the news. I wasn't just writing, you know, satire pieces or something that was like interesting. I was writing about how companies make money and in turn how people can get ahead in their careers. And many of the things that were the subjects of these pieces were things that I Googled like 50 times and couldn't find an answer myself. And I thought there's probably, you know, a group of people like myself in similar roles who are looking for the same stuff. And I think that's where I found what I like to call like audience market fit. It was people who were like-minded, who were looking for the same answers as I was. And I was just maybe, you know, maybe the first to put some of these things down in one spot and offer to send it out.
Yeah. And, you know, I follow a lot of, you know, obviously newsletters and blogs and things like that. But I would say there's less than a handful that I actually pay for, because you can just get information anywhere on the internet now, right? But, and again, I'm not saying this as a, you know, as a friend, but more so just the amount of, I mean, I even learned a lot, you know, obviously building a startup, there's so many things you got to learn. And I just, you know, already got a lot of value from your content, and you're always updating. That's the great thing is you're always updating. And so, no, that's amazing, man. So, the next question we have for you is, you know, trying to get your views on, obviously you were on the VC side, as you mentioned, right. And then you work for, you know, fast growing, you know, startups, unicorns. And then how has all those, and now becoming a CFO, you know, in another startup, how has all those point of view, what lessons have it, you know, gave you, maybe top one or two tips or lessons that you've learned from kind of all these different points of views?
Yeah. So like you said, I made the switch from working on the funding side of the table to the funded side. And I think it's quite a shock when you realize how hard it is to make the trains run on time. It's easy to be kind of a spectator and being like, hey, you know, the financial results were a little low, or this, you know, the costs were a little high. But like, once you're in the trenches doing it, you're like, wow, this is, I mean, and especially if you're growing at 100% year over year, like I always like to say, forecasting anything that in life that's growing at like an exponential rate is incredibly hard. I think the biggest thing I learned was how to make decisions with 80% of the information that I wish I had at the time. So startups, they move fast. And if you sit around, you wait for the perfect answer, you're going to be waiting forever, or you'll wait until a market opportunity is passed. So like being comfortable with making decisions in ambiguity. And I think I also learned how to organize resources effectively. And what I mean by that is you only have so many dollars to go around. So when you do allocate them, how do you take those dollars in one department and link that to the dollars in another department? You want to create scenarios where I like to say 1 + 1 = 3. And you want to get rid of scenarios where you're funding two initiatives that are working against each other. So kind of having that higher level view of how costs interact to drive revenues throughout the business. And a lot of this was built too, like in my first few years working at startups where I got into an FP&A role. And this is kind of the third thing that I've learned, and that's to say no to things. It was probably something I wasn't really good at early in my career. I think I still work at it every day, but it's really important as a CFO now. And it sounds kind of silly, but you have to say no to more things than you say yes to. And by doing that, it makes the things you do say yes to more impactful.
Yeah, it's that's actually, you know, a perfect segue to our next question, which is how do you, you know, kind of approach this CFO role in your company now? You know, meaning, do you see a difference, you know, from a year ago to now? Economy's changing. There's a lot more uncertainties, right? All of those things. Does that impact how you approach being a CFO? And yeah, what do you think?
So when I came to PartsTech, I was lucky to step into a business that was run incredibly efficiently. So, they were doing more with less already. And I want to, keep that theme up. We didn't, and this was before my time, didn't lean into massive fundraising rounds over the last 2 years. We raised what we need to hit our goals. And I think that creates a lot of focus of how to figure out how to put people in the best place to succeed. Constraint drives focus. I think what we saw over the last couple of years is there was a surplus of cash that companies had taken in. And, when you have that much money, you start saying yes to the B and C projects. And, you may also hire people that are B or C players in that particular role. Maybe they're not a great fit. So I think like what's changed the most is you have to really have your eyes and ears out for what the A things are that you want to say yes to, and making sure that you double down once you find something that is working well. A big thing that we try to do is to run smaller experiments with costs, and that way we don't go from, a low cost efficient model to a high cost model overnight. We want to test things, incubate them, see the results, and then, like I said, double and triple down on the things that are working.
Yeah, so something you brought up that I want to ask you about is, especially again, this episode is all about, kind of getting to the insights of, how a CFO thinks, right? So you talk about A projects, B projects, C projects. How do you determine, or how do you evaluate if a project is an A project versus like a B or a C?
Yeah, man, it's hard. And like, I'll level with you. Like, a lot of the things we buy, like, I don't fully know what they do. And like, I'll be the stupid one in the room. So like, someone was bringing up, are we going to buy Stitch or Fivetran for, some of the engineering and analytical work we're doing? Like, I couldn't really truly tell you, the ins and outs of those products. But, what I can confirm is there's a business case that they have to present as to why we need each tool, which has to be supported by an executive who's putting their name to it and will be directly accountable for results. So we trust execs, and I really trust them to make decisions on what tools they need to get the most out of their teams. And I look at finance or the CFO or FP&A in accounting not as like software or project decision makers in most cases. Sometimes I mean you have to kind of weigh in with an opinion, but more as like a broker between the business unit and the company P&L and the vendor or the hiring manager trying to get something done.
Yeah, no, make a lot of sense. Easier said than done. But what are some of your main challenges that you face, becoming a CFO now, especially with all your previous experiences? What are some of the main challenges you think?
Yeah, I get a lot of requests that come across my desk for us to procure things. And the finance job, or my job really is to understand a couple of things. So first, like what type of tool it is. And I like to separate tools into like, the semi-simple mind works. I put them into like four or five buckets. So you got like your critical infrastructure, you got productivity tools, you got communication tools, and you got security tools, and you got some other G&A stuff. And then what I try to do is I try to figure out how we pay for it. So is this going to be usage based? Is it going to be headcount based? How am I going to expect this to go up or down in terms of cost over time? And then understanding when we pay for it. So is it going to be annually up front? Is it going to be monthly in arrears? Is it going to be quarterly, et cetera? So I can plan out the cash flow that I need to fund this. And then this one's more, I guess, like philosophical, but what are the unintended consequences of this? So do we have the bandwidth to implement it? And are there any other tools that this takes the place of? So I would say, it's larger than just procurement, and it's not necessarily a problem. It's more just like a challenge that you need to understand to make sure you're making a good investment decision and wrapping your arms around why people want to buy something and what the company is going to get out of it. And, like I said before, saying no to things can be hard. I'm getting better at it over time, and it's saying, no to the right things so you can say yes to the right things.
Sure. So one thing that we're big on, at least, or what we believe in, is data or visibility, right? I think you have visibility on your people, right? You want to know if they're doing well. There's KPI of people and all of these things, and then, but a lot of times, all these services you're buying, whether technology or not, is you spend so much money on it, but you might have the financial payment data because you're paying invoices, but then all these other visibility, like what type of data do you feel like, and again, maybe talk through it from currently the CFO, but then also in previous fast growing startups, because what we found is that whether you're a large company or small startup, they all lack visibility. Like,
yeah.
So what are maybe some data that you feel like you're missing, you know, about these things you're buying, right, or just overall data that you feel like you'd like to get more visibility of, you feel like?
Totally. What keeps me up at night are what I would call orphaned applications. So those are things that we buy and are really good at that time when we buy them, but people stop using them over time. That keeps me up. So being able to like see, and I'm not sure, like there may be some things that out there that give you this visibility, but like, can you link it to that person's account and see who in the company is using that application? The other thing that keeps me up at night are there are certain applications out there. I won't, you know, talk dirty about any companies, but basically when you share something, it essentially eats up a license to whoever views the project. So like a proliferation of licenses over time that you didn't expect. And then the next thing you know, you started out at one cost you thought you were at, but you've expanded to so many licenses across the org that, you know, not just the product department is looking at to see their projects, but now finance has a license too, and that's running up costs. So I would say orphaned apps, you know, within the org worries me, and also apps that proliferate in licenses to like a level that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah. So another, you know, thing I want to get your take on is, you know, kind of the relationship. And again, especially now, like you said, you have to say no, maybe a lot more than maybe before, maybe, you know, maybe the economy and a lot of other companies I'm sure are facing the same. They feel like they have to say no a lot more. How do you kind of manage that even from the people and relationship with stakeholders perspective, right? Because obviously, look, it's hard for you to say no, but also for the person on the other side, when you keep saying no, it's like, well, yeah, you know, like, how can I do my job better? You know, like you're not giving me the tools that I need. There's always that kind of, you know, relationship that you also have to maintain, right? So how do you kind of find that balance? Like, how do you kind of deal with that, you think?
I think it's aligning people to the same goals. So like a lot of what we talk about as execs is, what's our Q1 goal? What's our Q2 goal? If we exceed this, can we use some of the excess to fund something that we're asking for elsewhere in the business? You know, we start with an annual plan in mind, but let's be real. If you're growing fast, you're updating that plan every single quarter and every single month even. So you always want to have the latest view on the company, and then having conversations with everybody and being completely transparent of like, listen, this was the goal we set for top line. This is where we are. We think we're going to come in at, you know, X, Y, or Z, and then saying, what does that free up within the org to do, you know, elsewhere? I think it's keeping people accountable to what they said. And it's not like pointing a finger and saying, hey, you know, you didn't do this or that, but just saying, listen, guys, we put this on paper. Are we going to achieve that or not? So I think that makes those conversations a lot easier. And I try to be transparent with people too, in terms of, you know, I'm not going down to the dollar of how much cash we may be making or burning, but, you know, I like to give a good temperature check so everybody's on the same page. I think where the conversations get harder is, you know, people think you're doing a lot better or a lot worse than you really are. You want people to have a degree of understanding of like how close you are to those goals at any given time, because then the decisions like make more sense from a human perspective. Like you can see why people are making those choices.
Yeah, that's I mean, first of all, that communication is, especially the bigger company you get, you know, it's harder and harder to have those communication and transparency. But it's I think that's critical. So what do you think CFO needs to do for the company in 2023 and beyond?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm by far not a CFO expert at this point. I'm learning on the fly and doing the best I can. I think at the end of the day, in 2023 and in any other year, it's really all about the people. And I say that not because people are 75% of our costs. I like to joke that like 75% of costs at software companies usually walk on 2 feet, but you need to hire the right people to hit the goals, and put them in a place to succeed. You know, you see a lot of layoffs that are going on in the tech world. And I think that's just because a lot of companies got over their skis, not just in hiring, but also maybe not managing the right people out over time. And you kind of have a talent debt that accumulates. So making sure you make the right hires and making sure you put people in the right place to succeed. something that I make as a goal for myself, you know, is to bring a higher degree of, I guess, EQ to the table. I think IQ can get you only so far, but you need to understand what motivates people and how to align incentives across the company to get the most out of everyone. And you want people to feel like they are contributing in a meaningful way to whatever the goals are. So I think what companies, you know, may, you know, kind of fall off the path that they want to be on because the goals aren't really aligned to what people feel like they can contribute to every day and see a tangible impact. I think that's going to be even more important, particularly in 2023, as we run more efficient companies. People want to be able to see that they're contributing to that efficiency and productivity over time.
Yeah, I think, and again, you know, you being a CFO, numbers guy, like that's your maybe specialty or expertise or experience or passion. But, you know, a lot of stakeholders have their own areas of expertise. But I think what you've kind of shown to me throughout time is like the leadership, the way you answer things, the way you look at things is very much about leadership. Like you don't look at yourself maybe just as a finance guy. You look at a lot of, you know, business impacts, people impact. And I think that's why we have you on, right, on this topic about the modern
CFO. Thank you, sir. But
the last question as we kind of get wrapped up here. So how can the modern CFO think about the overall business as a whole instead of only looking at the finance side? And you kind of, you know, alluded to it throughout kind of this conversation. But if you were to, you know, explain to other CFOs out there, or maybe people that's been doing, you know, being a CFO for 20 years and maybe know only one way of doing things. But what would be kind of your suggestion or insights into how do you look at the business as a whole, right, more than just the finance?
Yeah, I think you got to get outside of your bubble and talk to people throughout the org and be willing to ask questions that may make you feel uncomfortable at the time. I heard a quote the other day, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it was, practice and theory are the same thing, except, of course, in practice. And like a lot of things theoretically sound good that you should do, like when you sit back and think about business strategy, but you got to go and see how it actually works. An example of that would be, you know, you can't just throw technology at a problem. Like say you need help with scanning documents and getting like terms of a deal out. Like you can't just buy that and think that the problem's going to go away if you don't actually have a personal line to use it day to day and you haven't thought through how humans and technology interact. You know, don't just buy systems just to buy them. I think a big mistake that, you know, software companies make is just buying more software and not thinking about what the interaction is between the people and the technology. You can't just pick them in a bubble. The other thing I think that, you know, helps orgs, you know, run better is like forcing people from different departments to talk to each other. And I'll admit the first couple of years of my career, I stunk at this. Like I would stay in my bubble within sales ops or strategy. And, you know, sometimes I'd talk to people, but like I'd retreat pretty quickly back to where I felt comfortable. Now, I think like what helped me get to this level is being willing to go out and talk to the product team, maybe reading a couple of articles beforehand on something I wanted to ask some questions on and preparing for those meetings and asking them about what makes their business tick. I think like the modern CFO is someone who's going to be willing to understand, you know, from soup to nuts, how the company makes money and how each department is aligned to doing that. You can't just approach it from a finance function. It's got to be like a business-wide function. I was talking to a CFO who was much more experienced than me, and I was asking him for tips on like as coming in as a first-time CFO, what's the main, you know, change in mindset you have to have. And he said it's no longer, you know, you just being a finance person, and it's not the CFO, it's the CPO, the chief performance officer. You have to be responsible for the company's performance as a whole, and that's really understanding what every department brings to the table and how they interact.
Yeah, that's no, that's such a great insight. The last question that we love, you know, asking our guests is, you know, again, you've seen a lot, been through a lot. If you were to give either one personal advice and or business advice, and again, you've given out so many golden nuggets throughout this conversation on the business side, but if there was one personal and or business, something that you're really passionate about, what advice, what do you think you would want to give the audience?
I would say to stack your talents in whatever you're passionate about and whatever you feel you're good at. Like, I think, like, if I look at myself on paper, like, I was probably like in like a B or B plus in like valuations from like a private equity standpoint. And then if I was to look at like how good I was at FP&A in particular, maybe I was like, I don't know, a B or B plus again, but like then I bring writing to the table, how much I like storytelling. And I think that allowed me to stack my talents to kind of create a career at the intersection of the funding and the funded. And I think you can do this at any job or profession you may have. I heard this story about the guy Scott Adams who created the comic Dilbert. And I think he said, I was like in the 80th percentile for drawing in like art. I was, probably in like the 90th percentile for writing. And I was also, probably in like the 75th percentile in terms of like storytelling and humor. And he said, well, when I brought all three of those things together, it kind of created a killer combo. But if I was to try to do just one of those things on my own, I would have never made it to the top tier. And I kind of look at myself in the same way. How can I combine things that I'm interested in and good at to create one package? And I think there are a lot of people out there that are sitting on a lot of talents that could get them to the next level if they kind of find a creative way to stack them in the right direction.
Yeah, well, no, thanks for being the modern CFO, and thanks for being on the show. It was great to have you, CJ.
Thanks for having me on, Victor.